Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning from Holy Jerusalem. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you are listening to Pull Up a Chair, and I hope you will pull up a chair. Okay, a lot was going on this week. I'm having a sense of seder, order, holiness, needing the quiet. There are things going on in Israel that, my friends, are not being covered by the international news. It's not chic. It's not attractive. It's only about more rioting, more attacks on Jews. And it's very sad and very scary. And you're tuning in today to sort of get the personal belly-to-belly vibe. I'm not going to spend today repeating stories that you can certainly pick up in the Times of Israel, on our Israel News Talk radio site, in the Jerusalem Post, and even the Jewish Press, which is... So we're not going to go over that. We're going to talk about... We're going to finish the program today. I want to start with the end, because I always like dessert first. We are today going to actually finish taking a look at this week's Parsha at the end to say, what does it have to do with who we are and what we are doing here in Israel, in the world? Those of us who love the Jewish nation... People, stay strong, stay vibrant, stay clear, and we have a lot to learn about the Parsha from that. Let's see. I do want to say good morning to, of course, my friends in Israel, Australia. I always know you're listening in. Surprisingly, we have some listeners in this morning from Haiti. Good morning, Haiti. Cyprus, we have to talk about the new hotel in Larnaca, because when I went to Larnaca, it was like dump central. Now I hear it's gorgeous. France, of course, get the heck out of France, the UK, and we have our listeners, our regular from the KGB and the FBI, and they're listening in. So we might talk about the Israel pulling out of the Commission on the UN, very important. We're going to talk about bringing children to protests, and we're going to talk about loving one another, via hafta l'reicha kamocha. All right? So I ask you, go get a cup of coffee. If it's late at night, go get yourself a glass of wine, and I'll see you on the other side.
I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
And we're back. Andrea Simintov in Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people. And you are listening to my show, Pull Up a Chair. Okay, so things to discuss. Let's start with the mundane, because the mundane is always fun. This week, I was dragged, schlepped, moved, went to IKEA. IKEA, the famous, I always want to say Danish, but it's Swedish. It's a big Swedish mega chain. And everything there is so neat and so clean. And there was something very therapeutic, very cathartic about living in a country where all the edges are blurred and we just sort of are mired in the gray of public censorship, the gray of not knowing which way to turn, the gray of the mixture and the dissension between religious and not religious, and the various ethnicities living here in our Holy Land. And suddenly I find myself in a place with really nice Swedish meatballs, and everybody's saying, hoo-hoo, dude, all the names of everything. You can't read anything. You know, everything is the hoo-de-unkang. unit. And I loved it very much. And it was very relaxing. And it made me feel part of the world. Why? Why is this important today? Because sometimes I feel, and I know that I have this conversation, certainly with other women, that we're drowning in the vulgarity of the front pages of the newspaper and the advertisements that come across. Sometimes our very parve, very innocent YouTube feeds. I'll be listening to music for greatest from the 60s and 70s, 50s and 60s. Only these vulgar ads will come across. I flip. I want to know what's going on in New York. What's the weather? And I hear a famous actress discussing her body parts, the youthful appearance of her body parts on the front page. And I think to myself, dear God in heaven, have we no shame? And it brings me back to the protests to which children are brought, where children are used as pawns. And I have to be careful here. I have to be careful because I live in a country where our holy youth at the ages of late 17, early 18, are put into a mandatory army to protect our borders, and they're young, and so many have barely started their lives. Their impressions aren't even formed, and yet they protect us. And I think to myself, if I obsess and pray for the healthy outcome of these lovely boys and girls, see, I'm politically correct, even though there are very few girls in combat. What are we doing to five-year-olds? Why are we bringing them to the border where flames are being thrown, where in vulgar, consistent with vulgarity, helium-infused condoms are sent into the land of Israel to destroy? I laugh. They call this the Great March of Return. Mazdeh return. We gave them. They're living in a land. Gaza could be Gan Eden. It could be as beautiful. We gave them the farms. We gave them, you know why it's called the green line? When they separate, you fly over Israel and they say, ah, he's beyond the green line. He's below the green line. He's next to the green line. Oh, I just got a notice that I have to translate Gan Eden. Gan Eden is the Garden of Eden. You listen to this show long enough, you will be speaking Hebrew. We gave them Gan Eden. We gave them Eden. They did nothing. They protested, they burned, they shot, they blew up, and it worked. We gave them Gan Eden. We gave them the Garden of Eden. And what do they do? It's not enough that we gave them Gan Eden. We gave them a head start. We gave them an affirmative action community from which they could build and grow and thrive. And they have reduced their world to rubble and not satisfied, are trying to take us down. And I want to get back to bringing children to protests. When I was a little girl, I remember, I'm traumatized by this. There was in the early 1960s, I believe it was 1963, maybe 62, they introduced a concept in the New York City Board of Education, and it was called forced busing. Now, forced is an ugly word, but it meant taking children from different communities and bringing them, trying to toss the salad, mixing communities, making them more equally black and white, more ethnically diverse, more financially, economically blended. And I remember that in my community, there was a lot of anger among the we were a white community, white, Italian, and Jewish, and Irish, and there was no objection. I remember there was no objection to bringing children in to bringing children into our neighborhood and blending the schools, but there was a terrible objection to taking the children from our neighborhood where the schools had were really thriving and making great, you know, they were very admired schools, and busing the children out. If I tell you that I cannot remember if it was me, if it was my mother, if it was strangers, one of us, all of us, some of us, we laid down in front of a school bus. It must have been my mother lying down in front of a parked school bus, lying down with other women. And it was to make a point. I remember the trauma, the terrible trauma. thinking the bus might start. I don't know how it affected me all my whole life, but there's something about taking children, and if you cannot make your point, if your point is so hazy, then maybe you have to relook at your point. What are we forcing our children into politics? You know, when Jacob Zuma was the president of South Africa before he was replaced by this Ramaphosa, one of my grandchildren used to do a fantastic Jacob Zuma imitation. Oh, it was funny. He got up. It was the voice. It was in the shoulders. It was in the demeanor. It was the stuttering. It was the messing up the math. And it was extremely, extremely distasteful. Those who love him, those who birthed him, many people laughed. But those who came from my world, you could feel the communal cringe. So I'm asking you, people, don't take your children. Don't manipulate your point. I really don't think that my children, my grandchildren in Israel, they really don't care who's prime minister. Those who hate Bibi, those who love Bibi. We have several people running for mayor near Barkat. I really like near Barkat. I found out that he's despised. I don't think it affects children either way. And when I know that I see a certain billboard of somebody running for mayor of Jerusalem, I do get a little cringy. You know what? That's my business, not my kids, not my grandchildren. There are enough boogeymen under the bed. Parents should be protecting their children. Parents should be telling children, it'll be all right. Because when you present that evil, and we're going to talk more about this at the end of today's program, when you present that evil and you use children, you are not deliberate enough in your parenting to protect those kids and keep it Mr. Rogers for as long as possible, you really are guilty of, abuse, abusing trust, abusing promise, abusing hope. And hope is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I ended up here saying, children deserve their childhood. They don't care. And maybe we should also stop caring so much. We've lived through worse. Wherever you're holding, whether you loathe Bibi Netanyahu, we've lived through worse. We've lived through better. And it will pass. So put on the happy face. Okay, we talked about exploding condoms. I can't even laugh. You know, they talked about, tougher condoms, stronger, what do they call, sturdier latex condoms they're looking for. That used to be a yuck. You know what? It's not a yuck anymore. And I want to know why those children are in school. All right, so I cannot have time now to talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about Fred Marone. Two things very, very quickly. One is I came across a lovely, lovely obituary, lovely obituaries. I'm not going to read the whole obituary, but the end of this obituary, it was written by a distant friend of somebody who in Jerusalem recently just passed away. And one of the things they said, and I want to bring down to us, and it said, several of us regretted not having known these sides of Bob, that's a pseudonym, to which we were introduced as his body lay before us covered in a prayer shawl. It left us with an important lesson. When there are good things to say about people, share them while those people are still living. Let's not wait until they're dead to give them the appreciation they deserve. I think about this as a great mitzvah in Judaism for those of us who want to learn together. Let's grow together. It's Thursday, Erev Shabbos. It is called Mitzvah Shel Emet, the truth. It's accompanying somebody on their final journey, saying, I'm not going to go to the Shiva call. I'm not going to go to the funeral because he won't know that I was there anyway. Hahefech, the opposite. We go, we celebrate. But let's not miss these opportunities. You know what? It's ugly out there. It's vulgar out there. Today, I'm shaking from the vulgarity of this world, of the front page, of the means of protest, regardless of which side of the aisle you sit. So why can't we just amp up the conversation with a tad more love, a tad more caring, and certainly a tad more listening. Friends, the chat room is open. Please hit the orange button. Send me your comments. Let's talk together. And I'm going to see you on the other side. And maybe we're going to hear a little bit more from my friend, the words of the great Fred Marone. I'll see you on the other side. Time for more coffee.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things. But at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
And we're back. Hold on 1 second. I made this great. Aha, yeah. All right. Andrea Simintov, Jerusalem, Holy Jerusalem, we are back. Any of you remember playing in part of your high school or university psych courses? Or I was a theater major, and we used to have a game called the Trust Game. And the Trust Game is awfully scary. Try it in marriage. And what happens with the Trust Game is you close your eyes and you fall back into the arms of knowing someone who's going to catch you. It's an incredible experience, especially when it's a stranger. I mean, I expect my husband to catch me. He catches me all the time. He catches me when I'm not feeling well. He catches me when I need a cup of coffee. He catches me. And I pray that I catch him in my loving arms just as frequently. So one of the things about the Trust Game is, where do we hold? Where do we hold with our government? You know, oh, I'm looking here. I want you to imagine a moment. We talked a second about children trusting their parents, trusting to protect them from the boogeyman under the bed. Imagine being a parent in Sderot. I've been to Sderot. It's a lovely community. It's not a refugee camp. It is not dismal, dire, bleak. It is beautiful municipal parks, housing complexes, beautiful playgrounds, and where Arabs and Jews roam freely, interact, live beautifully. Now imagine being a parent raising a child in Sderot, a child who has 15 seconds to make it to the bomb shelter. That's 15 seconds. Start counting after the show, not during my program. And imagine, a child is supposed to trust his parents. Now, just the other night, today is just as of last night, not this past night, the night before, only because I'm a little lazy this morning. I want you to understand what it was like sleeping for a family in Sderot, for a father and a mother who promised to protect their children, 1:14 a.m. If I read it through, we won't make it till the end of the program. 40 code reds going off in Ashkelon, Keren Shalem. I'm just looking. Cholit near Yitzchak, Sufa, Kisufim. Parents running, children in pajamas, holding them, smiling, singing songs, telling them it's going to be all right. I'm begging you. And it's sad for me to say, especially, I'm begging the Jews listening to this show. It's sad to say, because so frequently our non-Jewish friends get it. They bleed for us. But I think that very frequently our Jewish friends don't want to think about what it means to live in Israel, to be holding down our spiritual and eternal fort for you and yours when the day when you will come home. It is brutal. And if I tell you the difference in the parents, when parents are proud, when the Arab parents say, yes, we have them in the bomb shelters, how can I relate? How can we relate? How can I relate to these mothers? I want them to worry about my child the way I worry about theirs, the way that the IDF on the border to this day, to this moment, unless something's happening during the show that I'm not aware of, are turning away their guns from the children that are launching these kites and these helium-filled condoms. And lest you think that kites and condoms and balloons are children's toys, let me promise you, they are deadly. Not satisfied with all they've been given, they seek to not take, destroy, render to rubble. All right. Send me a note. I hope you're still listening in there, Katie. Katie in Haiti. Let me see what else I wanted to share. Something bothered me. I know what it was. One of the reasons we're kind of moving down to this, are we caring about each other? Are we loving each other? What are we doing? I came across something on Facebook. I do not know this woman. I will not mention her name. I was shocked. In my flipping through the papers, I heard that there was really, you know, God have mercy on us, a 12-year-old girl, I believe, in New Jersey. Correct me if I'm incorrect. 12-year-old girl took her life. She was bullied brutally, bullied in school. Children walking up, sending her notes, sending notes saying, when are you going to kill yourself already? You have no friends. Vulnerable, malleable, porous, our children, the same children that we bring to protests. And this child, a wonderful child, by anybody's, I would say by a mass societal yardstick, cute, adorable, braces, dreams for the future, she took her life because of bullying. You know, even as a country, even as a radio host, we are not impervious to bullying. Somebody's unhappy. We want to please people. Children are people pleaser. Media people are audience pleasers. And I was thinking about this, and there was a post on my Facebook feed. Oh, good morning. The Czech Republic is listening in. Well, good morning. Welcome to Pull Up a Chair with Andrea Simintov in Jerusalem. Okay. Anyway, we were talking about bullying, and I know it's international. I don't know where children. I have grandchildren, little itty-bitty kids, and they know how to go, na, 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 na. When did that become the international teasing mocking tune? Every child, they're born knowing it. Anyway, an adult woman wrote on her Facebook page, on a certain page that I'm a grew it, she wrote that she was signing into work in the morning when one of her coworkers asked her why her bag looked so heavy. And she responded, I have my gym clothes in it. So lady number one responded, it's about time you start going to the gym. The woman, the writer, said, I go 5 times a week. Lady number one said, it doesn't look like it. And lady number two said, it's because you eat candy and crap. And then they both laughed, a little bit of giggling. The writer then says, could you stop? It's very hurtful. It's none of your business. And I already told you once not to say such thing. They were laughing. And later on, they came to apologize and said they felt that they could be open with her. I remember my daughters used to have friends who would say, did you see that dress she was wearing? And because we are Torah observant, and we're really not allowed, it's very clear, we're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, evil, negative talk about people, places, things, anything. So they would put a caveat and say, did you see that dress she was wearing? It made her look like a bag lady, in a good way. Adults do it. Children do it. Why are we so hurtful? That really stuck out to me. I wanted to share that with you. All right, more. We talked about that. All right. I'm going to say something a little bit unpopular, and that is I really like Avigdor Lieberman. I like a man who says, you made a mistake. Don't test our patience. I think that our feet are being held to the fire. I think we're in trouble. And I think that I promised you I forgot to talk about, okay, we're not going to talk about Nikki Haley right now, although I do love her. Okay, Fred Marone, Lebanese, Arab, lives in Canada, recent visitor to Israel, a people lover. Oh, a people lover. So he wrote a piece recently. I don't know where he wrote it for. Things come across my feed. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It says, why we Arabs must speak up. So I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I love Fred's passion, where he sits and says, where he talks about the Arab role, the Mufti role during the time of the Shoah, the Holocaust. And he says, not only did prominent Arabs of the time, such as the Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, openly support the Nazis, but also the Arabs under the British mandate put tremendous pressure on Britain to block Jewish immigration into pre-state Israel. British complied with Nazi demands in order to keep some semblance of support from the Arabs against Nazism. But even though far more Jews than Arabs joined the British forces, the British were not concerned about losing Jewish support, since Jews could never have sided with the Nazis. Here goes my Fred. Not only did we Arabs reject the Jews' legitimate right to return to land that they had at least as much right to inhabit as we did, but our actions, we also ensured that they would be killed. Our xenophobia facilitated the worst massacre in history, the killing of 6 million Jews for no other reason that they were Jews. As an Arab, I am disgusted by the role that we Arabs played in the Holocaust and by the fact that we still have not apologized or even recognized that role. I am disgusted that even after the reality of the Holocaust was widely known and that barely alive and emaciated survivors emerged from the death camps, we did not find it in our hearts to accept the tiny Jewish state that the United Nations offered the Jews in the UN partition plan of 1947. I am disgusted that we fought the Jews in an attempt to deny them the right to self-determination on land they had inhabited for 3,000 years. I am disgusted that we are still fighting the Jews 70 years later. I am disgusted that anti-Semitic hatred is today the largest and most consistently followed religion in the Arab world. Sane Arabs, speak up. Andrea Simintov, I'll speak to you on the other side with a tad of Torah.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
And we're back. Andrea Simintov in Jerusalem. Pull up a chair. All right. More comfortable than speaking about Nikki Haley and Avigdor Lieberman and parents who bring children to demonstrations, I really want to close out this week's segment. I want to talk about the Parsha, because so many of you listening in are either Jewish or love Jews, but we all have a common morality, a common desire to see the world a more loving, embracing, fabulous place. And this week's Parsha, this week's Torah segment, raises a lot of very, very human aspects of all of us. And when I talk about we are blood, we do not believe that there was one. We do not believe in Jesus as the Son of God. We do not believe And we don't hold by that. And we do not believe that there is any perfect man. The only perfect is God in heaven. Having said that, Moshe Rabbeinu came pretty darn close. And we talk, one of the hallmarks of his entire personality was that he was the humblest man who ever lived. You know, there's a difference between humility and modesty, and it's brought down by the Tel Sharav, who explains that one can soar to the heights of success and still be humble. Certainly, he was a rock star. He had top billing. Humility depends solely upon our personal yardsticks. You know, what are we measuring against? For example, it was a very nice example. If a 6-foot man measures himself against someone who's 5 feet tall, he can boast, hey, I'm the tallest guy around. However, if he measures himself against the height of the sun, 93 million miles above him, you know, obviously we're talking about something trivial. So the man who waxes very proudly because he measures himself only against smaller men is really not teaching us anything. So when we hold ourselves against our God in heaven, we have to remember that we are relatively insignificant. But here I'm actually going to interject in my notes. So how can we be insignificant, but also say that we were created B'Tselem Elohim, in God's image? And that's what we're going to explore right now. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's our teacher. He was humbled more than any other man exactly because he recognized his position and he achieved this closeness with God, which is to date, I would assume, unparalleled. Greatness, again, depends on the yardstick. Now, so we have to say, we know it's like a big American chiddush, you know, it's understood in America. All men are created equal. But is that really true? I'm not going to come down on either side of that aisle either. I know that I've been given certain tools, and every individual listening to this program has a different set of tools. What are our missions if we're rich, if we're poor, if we're sick, if we're downtrodden? The Chafetz Chaim describes how a poor person can be expected to be satisfied with his lot. What does that mean? I'm poor. I want to win the lottery. How can I living on, oatmeal and day-old bread? So a very nice example is one of, like, say, for example, a diamond cutter. He requires a delicate, a very expensive and fine saw to cut his gemstones. Now, a lumberjack also needs a very precision or instrument to cut his logs. But his instrument is very rough and it has deep gullet teeth. Obviously, it's going to smash to pieces a delicate diamond. Now, the diamond cutter's saw is probably more expensive. But if the lumberjack envies the diamond cutter, gee, what a great tool he has. I wish I had it for my craft. He's an idiot. He's missing the point. The fine saw, it might be very valuable. It's completely unsuited for his needs and vice versa. The Almighty created every human being, every one of us listening, with a different mission in life and invested each one of us with different physical and emotional tools to carry it out. You know, the person who comes to recognize his true mission in God's world can be genuinely satisfied, truly at peace, b'shalem, closed, whole, with the tools that are his and his alone. You know, I also have to segue here. The terrific Charles Krauthammer quoted in his recent essay on facing the end of his life that he really feels that he has lived the life he was meant to live. This is glorious. King Solomon, the wisest of men, we all know the baby chopping story. He says, I succeeded in understanding the whole Torah, but as soon as I reached this chapter a bit about the red heifer, the red cow, I searched and I probed and I questioned. I said, I will get wisdom, but it is far from me. He's talking about us. There are many things we don't understand. I talk very frequently about the porousness, the ability to say, I don't know, I don't get it. It doesn't make it wrong. It makes it, I don't get it. You can't talk about the laws of kashrut, keeping kosher, and say, well, those are old laws. They don't apply today because in those days you could get botulism from a shrimp, but today the cleaning is different. No, stop. Perhaps you don't get it. This week's parsha is called chukat. Chukat, chok. Laws that we do not exactly understand. Doesn't minimize them. There are people, and I'm talking to my people. There are people out there, and I'm one of them. Hands up. Some days, bleak. My four walls are muddy, leaking with leprosy, the leprosy of misunderstanding. But there are people who are not spiritually alive. They're injured. They're bruised. They're bruised by indifference. And worse, they're bruised by ignorance. Judaism, our sacred Torah, the laws that came from Sinai, it has no meaning. Their interests are mundane. They want to read about the movie star who has the body parts of a 16-year-old. The vulgarity. This is what is supreme. But the beauty of a Torah life is something that's available to everybody. And I mean everybody with a capital E. Those of us who have the blessing and the good fortune and to have either received a Torah education or the wisdom and the humility to seek it on our own. My goodness, friends, there are websites. I know I'm going to leave out 3 million, but you go into Eisha Torah, you go into Or Sameach, you go into Na'alei.com, you go into any of these, Matan, all of these, it's there, it's available. Accept them, learn, grow, challenge. If King Solomon can wrestle, who are we to say, I'm done? Just like with the law of the Para Aduma, the red calf, we are duty bound, each one of us, me, myself, behind this microphone, you pouring cereal for your children or folding your husband or wife's laundry, to come into contact with those who are spiritually dead. You know, a lot of us are in the dungeon, and one of us can claim that. Somebody once said to me, I'm not going to get involved. It's not my thing. One can claim that by involving ourselves in helping others, say, explore spirituality, we will also become blemished. We'll have to give up our time. I'll have to give up my advancement. It'll get in the way. Ah, he's useless. He's hopeless anyway. We're missing the significance. I really loved this. It's the guiding hand of the law of Torah saying that if you see somebody slipping into a spiritual mire, pull them out so that they're not lost forever. Open your Shabbos table. Invite to a Seder. Point to the page where the prayer is and where they are in the Torah. Yeah, you might get some mud on your shoes. It can look bad, but you know what? It washes off. All right, we have a minute and a half left, and that's why I'm going to bring in my favorite. Okay, we're talking this week in the Parsha, read it aloud, about the Para Aduma, the red calf, and Rabbi Zelig Pliskin, Gateway to Happiness. All right, he sees the ingredient of the Jewish concept of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, loving your fellow man the way you love yourself. What does that mean? So he explains that the priest is involved in the purification process. He becomes impure, helping them, just as I said before. But when somebody is losing his way, to help him is the ultimate love for your fellow man. A person who is not willing to make sacrifices for other people will always find reasons why it is too difficult for him to do acts of kindness for others. Helping other people, my friends, takes time. It takes energy. It often takes money. But if we're going to love each other, It's worth it. The greater our love for someone else, friend, blood, stranger, we can test ourselves by the amount of sacrifices we make. A person who is not willing to make sacrifices shows that he lacks love for others, but worse, lacks a connection from God in whose image we are created. My friends, Shabbat Shalom Umivorach from Jerusalem. Shabbat Shalom.
Did you ever want to join in on our shows and ask a question to our show host or their guests? Or maybe make a comment? Well, what are you waiting for? Join us in the Israel News Talk Radio chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us. Go now and try it out. It's the orange button on our homepage and pop-out player.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.